feelings and responses, and that will distract you from hearing Krishna. I'll just read some from the first and some from the second. Here's an answer to the critic. Yes, I appreciate your concern. We don't want to project our mental concoction onto Krishna's pastimes, but really this is not our intent. We want you to be extra perceptive. We want you to pay extra attention to the Lord's pastimes and absorb your minds in them. Then we want you to be still more attentive and take note, mental or otherwise, of what your genuine response to the pastime is. It is not meant to distract you from the Lord's activity, but to enhance your understanding and appreciation of it. After all, that's what Krishna Katha is about, sharing our appreciation of the pastimes of the Lord. Another on the same question. The easiest way to absorb ourselves in Krishna's Leela is to feel some involvement. So to be touched in some personal way. If we read without involvement of our feelings, it's a little impersonal, without so much relish of feeling. After all, we are feeling beings. The purpose of reading Krishna book is to become attracted to Krishna. And this appears to be easier to attain when using both the head and the heart to hear with. I didn't choose so many of the first ones because they were mostly, the answers were similar. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, but he manifested himself 5,000 years ago in the mood of, it should be 500 years ago, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, and exhibited the highest form of love of God in the conjugal mood. That was mostly what I was interested in. That Lord, based on that reading I gave from the TLC, that people say they know what love of God is, but they don't really know specifically, and Lord Chaitanya taught it, that we can love God the way we have lover and beloved, or conjugal love. But there were some other replies. Other devotees mentioned that Lord Chaitanya's special significance was the emphasis on chanting of the holy name. And then, although Lord Chaitanya particularly presented the conjugal rasa, and there are other relationships with Krishna we know of which are also higher than the father-child relationship, which is mostly what it is in Christianity. One can become the friend of God and play and joke with him. One can even become the parent of God and take an apparently superior position to him. So many, I marked them all up, but now it seems maybe not so necessary to read them. At least you can know I'm reading the homework carefully. The answers gave a nice balance that we're not getting distracted from reading Krishna book by noticing our own impressions to the scenes being described. Oh, this one I particularly like. Yadarnath. Mat chitta mat gata prana. The essence is to associate and hear from each other. When we pay attention to what our feelings are, we are allowing ourselves to open our heart to more katha. And if we see that our feelings are negative, at least we know and can do something about it. We can avoid the danger of becoming sahajiyas. And Bhakta Jason, he regularly has good answers. The most exalted mood of separation between lover and beloved. This is what Lord Chaitanya taught. though God is the lover, and we as living beings are His beloved. Such a relationship is even more intimate than loving God as your child or dependent. And on the second question he said, our feelings when we are hearing Krishna's lila must be recognized in order to know if and how we are serving the Lord. This is the Supreme Lord, and we are His servants. Where there are these two, there must be service. We should not ignore our loving feelings when we hear Krishna's lila, because that is how we serve Him by love. Okay. So tonight we're going to do the chapter called Delivering the Wives of the Brahmins. And first I'll describe the lila leading up to the section that we're going to hear. After Krishna stole the garments of the gopis, he spent the rest of that morning with his cowherd boys. So now, this whole first section of the Brahmin's wives story is Sakya Ras, very, very jolly and intimate exchanges with Krishna and his cowherd friends. So they're playing very vigorously, and at one point the boys say to Krishna that we haven't eaten and we are hungry. Can you get us something to eat? There was another time when they said that in the Dhanakasura Lila. They said, Krishna, there's some very nice fruits in Talavan forest. We can smell them even now. We can only have some. So in the Bhagavatam purport, we learn that Vishnu Chakravarti says the boys actually thought that maybe Krishna was hungry. So they weren't asking Krishna to satisfy their sense gratification. But they knew that if they said they were hungry, then Krishna would be very responsive. If they just said, Krishna, you must be hungry, he might not have been so interested to appease his own hunger. So they may believe they were hungry. Then Krishna says, yes, if you're hungry, we can get some lunch. There's a yajna going on nearby where these Brahmins are offering food as part of their religious yajna. You go there. This scene for me, there's a number of scenes where they go and then they come back and then they go again to the wives. It's very visual, or you can visualize it. The boy, especially in the boys' presence, they are so willing to do whatever Krishna says, and you can almost see them walking with a very springy step, very confident, and of course they're always nicely dressed and their bodies are strong and effulgent. They're good servants of the Lord. And they're just the opposite of the mentality of somebody dragging their heels or being apathetic. They're so full of life. Young boys who, as we read in an earlier chapter, attained this position after many, many heaps of pious activities accumulated to play with Krishna. So they stride into the scene of the religious sacrifice and say to the Brahmins there, well, first of all, their instructions by Krishna were not to mention my name directly, because I'm only a Vaishya by birth. They may ignore you. Say that you're coming on behalf of Balaram, because he's a Kshatriya. This story, often devotees see it as a kind of sankirtan or book distribution story, going begging on the orders of, in this case, Krishna, the supreme sankirtan leader. So they're confident on his order, but they approach these people who are actually non-devotees, and so Krishna has given them a tactic. If you too directly say, we're the Hare Krishnas, we want something for Krishna. they will be immediately denied by these inimical people. So they're to say that they're from Balaram. But when you hear what they say, they seem to have just forgotten that. They just say right away, in their enthusiasm, unable to cover up, they say, we're representing Krishna and Balaram, who are Vishnu, and they're nearby, and we would like some food, and we know that you can give food, because we notice at this stage in the religious sacrifice it's permissible to give food. The Prabhupada points out that they were so intelligent, even about Vedic sacrifices, they knew that it was a time that they could be given food. But the shocking thing is that the Brahmins don't even look up, don't even acknowledge their presence. Again, their presence is so full of life, it's not that they didn't notice all these boys there talking, and I'm sure they were talking loudly enough too. So there's just a gross ignoring them. And in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of anarthas, this is called becoming indifferent to Krishna out of pride for varnashram dharma. So if you're too stuck up in your varnashram, varna and ashram, and you see others as inferior, you may ignore Krishna right when he walks into your presence, or in this case, his representatives come. I can ask a question at this point about Krishna Leela. Why is it that on different occasions when Krishna was present, people like this didn't recognize him, although he didn't appear before them, still they were his representatives and glorified Krishna? How is it that people didn't know that Supreme Personality of Godhead was present? It's one thing to ignore it 5,000 years later, but when he's actually present with all his energies and omnipotency, why do people... Yes? Yes, but I want an answer. That's good. That's the answer, certainly. But it doesn't distinguish why, even then, when he was personally there.
Because Krishna said in order to know him, one has to be devoted to him. And they didn't have that emotional qualification.
So even though he was there...
Even though he was there, so they could recognize... I mean, they might have saw somebody there.
Yeah.
They didn't recognize his position, or they certainly weren't attracted to him, but even the other residents of Vrindavan might not have even recognized him as the Supreme Personality of God in Vishnu, but they were certainly attracted to
him. Yeah, that's a different thing. They saw him, they didn't see anything but him.
Yeah.
But maybe I shouldn't overemphasize the difference between now and then. Bhagavad Gita also says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya, I put a curtain of Maya. And Prabhupada also tells us that only a few hundred people knew Krishna was God or was the all attractive when he was here. Mother?
Is that verse in the Kamsara Arena where it's describing how all the different people saw Krishna? So Krishna's responding according to the person's desire to see him, how the cowherd girl saw him.
So there are explanations in Shastra specifically about this phenomena, or that other one he just mentioned. The wrestlers saw him as a thunderbolt, and some people saw him as an ordinary, insignificant person due to their reciprocation, fortunate or unfortunate. Yeah? Invisible. You're like an actor. Invisible to who? The non-devotee? Alright. So, being ignored, the boys went back to their leader, Krishna, and said, what happened? We were rejected. And he smiles and says, you should not be sorry. This is the nature of begging. That sometimes you are refused. So, don't be disappointed. You cannot be successful everywhere. Good advice, Hari Dev, for the Sankirtan part. If you have a difficult day, you can go back and just think that you're reporting to Krishna and get his assurance. that you can't always be successful. And then he immediately gave them a new field, preach where it's favorable. He said, I know where you can go to get us some food. There's the wives of these Brahmins, unlike the Brahmins, are very wonderful devotees. If you go to them, I'm sure they'll give you. So immediately, with that same spring to the step, the boys left and in a group and went to the homes of these Brahmins' wives as good servitors. And it's a nice description that they were inside their homes. They're very beautiful, beautifully dressed. But what appealed to me is that, how they were already at home just meditating on Krishna. They'd heard about Krishna from different other ladies. And so you think of somebody at home, what are they thinking of? People are watching television or they're doing something, they're wrapped up in their domestic duties. But these ladies, although they happened to be preparing a feast for their husband's religious sacrifice, they were actually just sitting there thinking of Krishna with great love, like mystic yogis, it says. So, he immediately responded to the request of the boys, and whatever they had cooked, they decided they'd give that, and they worried later whether there would be anything for their husband's religious sacrifice. Prabhupada says, these reactions were spontaneous. They did not have to be convinced of the importance of Krishna and Balaram. Immediately upon hearing their names, they became very anxious to see them. Being advanced in thinking of Krishna constantly, they were performing the greatest form of mystic meditation. But it wasn't easy to go, to do this, because their husbands told them, don't go. And they forcibly tried to stop them. So, Prabhupada says, when a devotee is called by the attraction of Krishna, he does not care for bodily ties. This is partly an answer to the homework question you're handing in now about when can we break social convention. But one of the strongest social conventions is to obey your husband, or to obey other authorities like that. But if such authorities, husband, a guru, a government leader, forbid you, father, then there's no need for the convention of obeying such non-devotee who tells you not to serve Krishna. And therefore they went with the feast. They decided they just didn't give the feast, they were going to personally deliver it, and they also had something else in mind in going to bring the feast. So this is where we're going to have our reading, and it's a really wonderful, it opens with a wonderful picture of Krishna, a visual description of Krishna in the forest, and we can see it just as they are seeing it. It's like through there, Sukadeva is telling us what the ladies saw as they entered and saw the personality of Godhead who they were thinking of in their homes. The very first sight of him is described, and their response. So let's break up into the groups, and then we'll have the reading of this section. So let's get ready. According to our receptive ability, we can actually meet Krishna face to face through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, and particularly when he is described. Just consider how long we have waited. We have come up to the lower species of life, the human species, and different religious feelings to come to this point. And even within Vedic knowledge, there's so much gradual leading up to the personality of Godhead. And even within the Vishnu Tattva, there's so many different ways to worship Vishnu. And now, by Prabhupada's grace, we've been attracted to have the darshan of Krishna in his original, all-attractive form in the forest of Vrindavan. So we can only hear according to our level of purity, but Every time we hear it's a new chance, just as when we chant Hare Krishna, we may feel that we're at a low level in our japa, but there's always another chance to hear better and to start some real improvement if we desire. So in this mood, just like the ladies, let us eagerly go into the forest of Vrindavan via the medium of Shukadeva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada. All right.
The Brahmin's wives saw Krishna putting on a garment glittering like gold. He wore a nice garland of forest flowers and a peacock feather on his head. He was also painted with minerals found in Vrindavan, and he looked exactly like a dancing actor on a theatrical stage. They saw him keeping one hand on the shoulder of his friend, and in his other hand he was holding a lotus flower. His ears were decorated with lilies. He wore marks of tilak, and he was smiling charmingly. With their very eyes, the wives of the Brahmins saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of whom they had heard so much, who was so dear to them, and in whom their minds were always absorbed. Now they saw him, eye to eye and face to face, and Krishna entered within their hearts through their eyes. They began to embrace Krishna to their heart's content, and the distress of separation was mitigated immediately. They were just like great sages who, by their advancement of knowledge, merge into the existence of the Supreme. Krishna welcomed them with the following words: "My dear wives of the Brahmins, you are all very fortunate and welcome here. Please let me know what I can do for you. Your coming here, neglecting all the restrictions and hindrances of relatives, fathers, brothers, and husbands, in order to see me, is completely befitting. One who does this actually knows his self-interest, because rendering transcendental loving service unto me without motive or restriction is actually auspicious for the living entities." "My dear wives of the Brahmanas," Krishna said, "you can now return to your homes, engage yourselves in sacrificial activities, and be engaged in the service of your husbands and household affairs, so that your husbands will be pleased with you and the sacrifice which they have begun will be properly executed. After all, your husbands are householders, and without your help, how can they execute their prescribed duties?" The wives of the Brahmins replied, "Dear Lord, this sort of instruction does not befit you. Your eternal promise is that you will always protect your devotees, and now you must fulfill this promise. Anyone who comes and surrenders unto you never goes back to the conditioned life of material existence. We expect that you will now fulfill your promise. We have surrendered unto your lotus feet, which are covered by the tulsi leaves, so we have no more desire to return to the company of our so-called relatives, friends, and society, and give up the shelter of your lotus feet. And what shall we do returning home? Our husbands, brothers, fathers, sons, mothers, and our friends do not expect to see us, because we have already left them all. Therefore, we have no shelter to return to. Please, therefore, do not ask us to return home, but arrange for our stay under your lotus feet, so that we can eternally live under your protection." The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, "My dear wives, rest assured that your husbands will not neglect you on your return, nor will your brothers, sons, or fathers refuse to accept you. Because you are my pure devotees, not only your relatives, but also people in general, as well as the demigods, will be satisfied with you. Krishna is situated as the Supersoul in everyone's heart. So, if someone becomes a pure devotee of Lord Krishna, he immediately becomes pleasing to everyone. The pure devotee of Lord Krishna is never inimical to anyone. A sane person cannot be an enemy of a pure devotee. Transcendental love for me does not depend upon bodily connection, Krishna said further. But anyone whose mind is always absorbed in me will surely, very soon, come to me for my eternal association. After being instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the wives again returned home to their respective husbands. Pleased to see their wives back home, the Brahmins executed the performances of sacrifices by sitting together as it is enjoyed in the Shastras. According to Vedic principle, religious rituals must be executed by the husband and wife together. When the Brahmins' wives returned, the sacrifice was duly and nicely executed. One of the Brahmins' wives, however, who was forcibly checked from going to see Krishna, began to remember him as she heard of his bodily features. Being completely absorbed in his thought, she gave up her material body, conditioned by the laws of nature.
You can start discussing. I just recalled something that one of you wrote on your homework about this reading process, that one of our godbrothers, you quoted Varshana Swami, and he said that when we're reading Krishna Leela, there appears, or Chaitanya Leela, which he especially likes to speak on, that there often appears to be a vacancy in the Leela. And that vacancy is meant to be filled by us. I don't know exactly what he meant by that, but what I would like to, it appealed to me that I think of a vacancy that occurs in feeling, that sometimes we feel let down or disappointed, feel something is lacking, either when we're speaking or others are speaking. And so in that sense, what has to be entered is, if we put ourselves into it wholeheartedly, that will fill the vacancy that you feel. It may be due to so many things. It may be due to the speaker didn't speak very completely or with so much depth, or that you just spoke and you don't like what you said, or your false ego is there. But if you like burn up anyanartha by surrendering to the process of chanting and hearing, then that vacancy or lacking will disappear. And so don't worry about it. It's just like inattention. You don't worry about inattention, just put your mind back. So don't worry if you get that sinking feeling, oh, this isn't so wonderful. But just surrender and... So that expression is there. Just think like that. The vacancy is to be filled by you. Then it will come to life. One thing when I started hearing, or even before you began speaking, I wish that I had said something about this Leela not being about the gopis. We had read two about the gopis, and we're getting kind of momentum thinking of Krishna and the gopis. But now the Krishna book switches to this. And a lot of comparisons come to mind, although I didn't hear any in the group. But there's one right away thinks of these ladies and the difference between them and the gopis. And I just wanted to mention that if I had eased us into the fact that just noticing that after telling us about the gopis, now Sukadeva is telling us a different kind of story, it might have alerted us to how Krishna deals with these ladies. But actually, it will really come up later in the rasa dance. That's when the contrast will really come up. because it's the same thing. Krishna's in the forest, the ladies go to him, he tells them to go home, and then you can see the difference. One devotee was speaking a lesson, more than one, lessons that they had heard in this story to apply to their spiritual life. And those things, when they're said sincerely, they always seem very valuable. Valuable starting to us who have them, and to be shared also. Like someone said, it made me appreciate that I shouldn't overlook devotees just because they happen to be new devotees, or in this case, because if they happen to be women. We never know who's or the boys. The Brahmins overlook the boys because they're of their. So boys are slighted and women are slighted in this chapter by pride in Varnashram. And in both cases, they turn out to be the better devotees. So he said, I should not do this in my own life. So this is like listening with the conscience. We listen with visualization to enter the lila. When you listen with you let your conscience be touched. This is very good too. I want to improve myself, and so I hear a lesson. I also noted that there's a this chapter has a combination of shifts from very nectarian visual lila to very instructional speaking by Srila Prabhupada. He stops the action and he preaches, and Shukadeva himself does it. Says about, and Krishna does it to the ladies. He gets very instructional, and so I advised us to flow with this and see it as all one continual thing. But sometimes you're seeing the golden garment. And the hand on the friend, and the minerals on his face, and the lotus in his hand, and then next minute you're hearing moral or religious instructions, and then again the visual. So the Krishna book, some people think this is like a flaw in the Krishna book, or it's troublesome to read, and therefore in the children's editions these things are taken out. The children's edition, one of the most striking parts was that it was edited by a devotee named Parvati for children with nice pictures and everything. The chapter, The Prayers of Lord Brahma, it starts out that Lord Brahma comes before Krishna, bows down and prays. And then the next sentence says, and so, after hearing the prayers of Lord Brahma, no prayers, because it's so philosophical, the children would be bored. So we don't get bored. But we like to hear everything about Krishna. That's our ideal hearing. I'd like to share with you a response that I gave last time I had the session on this chapter. And I was like, well, these things are nice for us, again, they're not canned, but it's like, oh, I never thought of that before. We get some new insight, especially if it's something that troubled us or that we never could appreciate about Krishna. And then suddenly, We do appreciate. I sometimes fail to appreciate Krishna being so decorated with necklaces and bracelets and everything. I remember once I was speaking in a college class and I had a picture of Krishna. And after they finished the lecture, asked for questions of the professor. He said, that's Krishna? Is that Krishna? And I said, yes. He said, well, what's with the jewelry? Said, why all the jewelry? And I could understand. He was puzzled. I said, why does God have to have jewelry? So I answered him from the brain, with philosophy, but I myself sometimes couldn't always appreciate a Krishna's being dressed. Maybe I don't appreciate the way they dress the deities and so on, with a mundane mentality. So on hearing this one, because it was so attractive, I kind of broke through that. And here's what I was saying. Krishna is a person, and usually he does things for the pleasure of his devotees. He's described as a dancing actor here. It sounds like someone who dresses up with all the beautiful clothes in the highest fashion, as is a human tendency. When someone is dressed up very tastefully, he's attractive. Just as in your own family, if the son dresses up for some occasion, or the father, the other family members say, oh, Dad, or Johnny, you really look nice. Or the girl is going to a dance, and the family members will appreciate her dressing up so beautifully. So Krishna is not made beautiful by clothing, but he has this personal tendency that he likes to dress to the hilt. And everything he does, in everything he does, even when he's fighting, he dresses up and notices how he's... Someone may say, well, why? If he's God, why all the attention to tailored clothes and everything? But he likes to do that, because it delights the devotees when they see him. I was thinking about the deity worship. It helps explain deity worship. Sometimes people have a problem. We pile on decorations, necklaces, garlands, this dress and that dress, tomorrow another dress, tonight another one. But that is the way Krishna likes it. He dresses himself, or his parents dress him, like that. It is one of those things. There is no explanation, except he likes to do it. And he's not a dull person. He likes the nicest clothes. We see when he went to Mathura, he said, give us that man with the clothes. Give me some clothes. And they killed him when he didn't give the clothes. And then they took out the best clothes and they dressed themselves up. I got a better appreciation of this. It is up to us to come up to the appreciation, like the ladies, of seeing Krishna. That is part of our meditation. We don't meditate on void, but see the nice silken turban, see the flowers, the dhoti, and so on. This is deity worship. And there's also the statement that when Krishna appeared on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he didn't look like he had come to fight, but just to please everyone with his beautiful garlands and dress. So mostly devotees, sannyasis and brahmacharis, but all devotees, we tend to be renounced. We don't have so many fancy clothes, but we use that propensity for pleasing Krishna, dressing Krishna up. We're almost out of time. I'm not going to do all that I wanted to do. I had some questions, and I had a little tape of Prabhupada, and then the homework. What time do you have? 2 minutes left or something?
4 minutes.
4? Well, 2 minutes, I'll explain the 2 minutes of homework. So, many of you are into the right into the heart of the issues, how he sent them home to their husbands, and the Lord sometimes treats us one way and sometimes another. When you go to surrender, you never know how he's going to, what he's going to tell you to do. But we have to do whatever he says, and that's the best for us. Krishna treats everyone individually, and he knows what's the best way for us to surrender. He's, in your case, he says, although I say surrender to me, you should surrender like this. So it's personal treatment that we want from the Guru or from Krishna. And it's not always the same, how to surrender. We have to hear from him how that's to be done. A note by Vishwanath Chakravarti, he says that after this time, the husbands accepted the wives as their spiritual masters. So the situation changed at home. And the Brahmins, they said, to hell with our learning, to hell with this, to hell with that. We didn't appreciate Krishna as our wives did. So they get much more appreciation for Krishna. All right, I'll give you the homework now. First one, this is a general one about the reading and hearing process. Name some aspect of your hearing and speaking Krishna book in these group sessions that you want to improve. State what you think you can do in order to improve before this course is over. State some area that you think you need improvement in your participation in the hearing and speaking in the groups, and what you think you can do about it in the remaining classes. Yes?
Yes, one more time.
Okay. State some area or some point of your hearing and speaking that you want to improve in the groups. And how will you improve it? I want you to, by this question, to meditate in a practical way so that you can improve. And then the second question, the Leela states that the cowherd boys knew all about yajna, even though they may not have received an education. Why is it necessary for ISKCON devotees to get degrees, academic degrees, such as Bhakti Shastra? Okay, start again more slowly. The cowherd boys knew all about yajna, even though they never received formal education. So, why is it necessary for ISKCON devotees to receive academic degrees such as Bhakti Shastra? If we can get the knowledge just by hearing from authorized sources. It's good to read ahead, so we're not skipping anything, we're just going next to the Govardhan Leela. And if you can read two chapters, that will be good. We'll try to cover them, see as far as we can get. I think the Govardhan Leela will be a real test for us to maintain freshness with a story that we've heard, as Nadia says, millions of times. But maybe millions of times we're just dozing when the Leela is being read. We can hear it for the first time. The boys...